Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. Today we are celebrating the Partridge Family and their music. This was the number one song, their first single.
And right in the middle of a good dream, like all at once I wake up from something that keeps knocking.
Do you believe in love? This is for all you angels out there that believe in love. I think I love you. David Cassidy and the Partridge Family. Today's show, we're going to celebrate the Partridge Family and their music, and we have a wonderful guest on today that's wrote the definitive book on the Partridge Family and their music, Johnny Ray Miller. The book's entitled When We're Singing. It's available everywhere, but the best place to get it is right from John himself at whenweresinging.com, and there's no G on that singing, When We're Singing. So we'll be back in 20 seconds, and let's relive the iconic, ultimate bubblegum superstar, Partridge Family and David Cassidy. We'll be right back on Richard Rossi Live. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome, John Miller. Excited to have you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Well, I can tell you, John, that I remember very, very well, and as you know, I have a few connections to some of the folks in this group myself, and I remember very well when David hit it big, and he was just everywhere, and he was the most beautiful-looking person. My friend Josie Pollock, that dated him at that time, who's a British woman, the hula hoop queen. She's been on the show a couple times. But Josie dated him, and she said, "Well, Richard, you know, I am a bit shallow," and he was just so damn pretty. And he was. He was so beautiful, and the songs were, you know, people put me down as a rock and roll guitarist for loving the Partridge Family, that's bubblegum, but it sure was the best bubblegum I've ever heard.
Yeah, and that's funny you say that, because that was a big theme in my book, is that I don't even think of it as bubblegum. It just seems like it was underrated for its time, and people don't realize these musicians and the background vocalists who sang on those records were, you know, they were the top-notch players of the day, and that music coming out of that machine we knew as the Partridge Family was really this great adult contemporary sort of beginning of the soft rock era, and the sound of it just fit right into that. If you took the image away, you would have music that was comparable to all the other soft rock of the day.
Yeah, I mean, the Wrecking Crew and these backing musicians, Tommy Tedesco, Hal Blaine, and the quality of songwriters like Tony Romeo and Carole King, and and of course David Cassidy wrote several great songs as well that were some of their songs.
Yeah, he wrote for the Partridge Family too. Wes Farrell was the producer, and he submitted a lot of songs, I think, but him and Wes Farrell had different ideas on where the music would go, so ultimately David's songs that he wrote would start to appear on his solo albums more so than on the Partridge Family.
Yeah, I still have an LP of Cherish, his solo album.
Great album.
Yeah. It's amazing to me that in the very beginning David Cassidy's not singing, because I heard Danny Bonaducci say, "Oh my God, when they finally let David sing, it just really went up 10,000 notches in quality, didn't it?"
Yeah, I think that was when they found their identity, is when they discovered him. And Wes Farrell had no bones about it. He saw right away, if this guy could sing, what they would have on their hands. And then, meanwhile, over in the TV studio, David Cassidy is feeling foolish lip syncing and thinking, you know, I wonder if I could actually be the one to sing on these records. And both ideas were the same idea, and once it came together, it just Well, I'd like to say it redefined the Partridge Family sound, but only those who know, the diehard fans of us, know that there was a handful of songs that were released without David Cassidy singing at the very beginning. Actually, there's several more than people realize. A lot of them did not ever get released, and they're still out there as part of this body of music, of unreleased music.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, you know, that's another whole subject that doesn't get talked about that much. There are a lot of unreleased songs by the Partridge Family. And, you know, in the 90s when the Monkees were coming out strong on, I can't think of the label, Rhino. They came out and Rhino had picked them up and reissued all of their unreleased songs and reissued all of their albums to CD. The Partridge Families never came out, and so to this day, fans are waiting, begging Sony eagerly to consider a box set of some of those unreleased songs, because there are still songs in the vault. Yeah, there's still songs in the vault that that were written by Jerry Goffin, who wrote "I'll Meet You Halfway." And,
oh my God, we got to hear that unreleased stuff.
I know.
Now, there was a
greatest
hits CD. In fact, Shirley Jones won an Oscar for the film Elmer Gantry, and I played Elmer Gantry in the play version. In fact, I'm doing actually a film we're shooting right now that's kind of a modern-day Elmer Gantry character. But anyways, I was blessed to be invited to go visit Shirley Jones at her home, and I brought the Partridge Family greatest hits CD. And we had a great talk about all kind of stuff, how we were both from Pittsburgh. And she asked, you know, I think she asked me if I had a crush on Susan Day like all the other boys. And I said, Susan's really pretty, but I think you were my number one most beautiful person on the Partridge Family. And she told me she was flattered. And then Marty said, hey, knock that stuff off. We had a lot of fun. And I ended up on Marty's talk show. But the Partridge Family Greatest Hits CD, I brought a copy, and my kids loved the CD as well. We used to put on the CD, and there was one particular song that the moment I heard it as a kid made me feel so happy, and it was just dance. And me and my childhood friend, Angel, who loved the Partridge Family, we just loved that music and dancing to that stuff. So I asked Shirley, would you sign my Partridge Family Greatest Hits CD for my son Josh and our daughter, daughter Karis and our son Josh, and I brought it home and I said, Mrs. Partridge, sign this. And we put on Partridge Family Greatest Hits CD and signed by Shirley at her home. But this is the song that I don't know what it is. It makes me feel happier than anything on earth. This one right here.
Oh yeah. Summer Day.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's a great song.
I feel the sunlight on my face.
Oh, that song just makes me happy. It just it takes me to that time of being
yeah.
a kid, and it's summer, and you're out of school, and you're just so happy and free. And I think it's a regression. There's a therapist I was reading, a doctor that studied this, and said when we watch old shows or we hear old music from our childhood, it really takes us to this innocence. I mean, these songs, for me, was like my first articulation of hearing something about romantic feelings, romantic love, and it really takes us back, doesn't it?
It sure does, and that song you're playing, the genius behind that, Tony Romeo, was actually, it's almost funny how he was tapping into exactly what you're talking about. The song's about nostalgia and the good old days, and all these years later, that's exactly what we're doing with our Partridge Family music and whatever other music that, you know, we love. The power of the nostalgia is just something that, you know, you can't really describe. That song, Summer Days, was actually written by Tony Romeo for David Cassidy's first solo album, Cherish. And it was
really?
Going to be the title song. Yeah, it was going to be the title song. It was going to be the first song released from Cherish. And at the 11th hour, they changed it. Wes Farrell wanted to play it safe, and so he looked for one of the greatest songs of all time that, you know, that garners the biggest numbers, and he calls Tony Romeo up, and Tony was disappointed over the switch, but Cherish then became the replacement tune, and they recorded the Partridge Family, Summer Days for the Partridge Family, and could have been a hit from the Partridge Family too,
that.
But was never released. Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Wow, so this was going to be on his solo album, not
right.
A Partridge Family song. Wow.
Right. It was going to be the title song. It was going to be the first single. And then at the 11th hour, they switched it. Isn't that interesting?
It sure is. And I love the way, I'm glad it is a Partridge Family song, because I love the way he sings it to the kids and gets down and sings it to Suzanne, who unfortunately is no longer with us.
Oh, yeah, you mean the video on the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is a great video.
Well, you know, how did you finally decide to take this on as such a big project with the book? You raised some money, I saw online, with Kickstarter, so you had a vision and you really asked for help and you really went out there. What put you over the line to say, I'm going to really go for it, I'm going to really do it and do this kind of anthology of the Partridge Family and their music?
Basically one step at a time. I started the research, and it just kind of took on an energy of its own, and I just kept rolling with it. And so one interview became another, and everyone was excited to talk about this music because the story's never been told before. In fact, Shirley Jones said to me when I interviewed her, I can't believe no one has done this so far, and she said she was really glad that someone was doing it. So that in and of itself is motivation to keep on going, you know, when you got Shirley Jones' blessing to keep going. And so I just kept going, and I got into digging up names and researching the minutiae of it all, you know, right down to who designed the albums and figuring out who they were. And it was like solving a mystery in a sort of a way, because I would have to go digging for people who a lot of times nobody knew was associated with the Partridge Family, and then to try to find them. I had to find them, contact them, and tell them what I was up to and get the interview from them. So it took a long time, and then along the way, I made a lot of friends. There's a lot of Partridge Family fans out there, and when I would, you know, cross paths with them, they would get on board and offer to help. And one of the guys was Ken Sharp, a musician and a writer himself. And it was his idea that I try Kickstarter instead of trying to seek out a publisher. And at first, I was hesitant, only because I didn't really want to fundraise, although I had a strong background in it. But then the more he would, tell me how I would keep control of it, what it potentially could be if we won the campaign, which is something that you would never see otherwise if it hadn't been funded by the very people who wanted the book, it was exciting. So we just we spent about 9 months preparing for it and launched it and ran it for 30 days, and it was 30 days of, you know, really being out there and aggressive about getting people, making people aware of what you're doing and why you're doing it. And so that's how it happened. It just kind of, it's really kind of a mind blower when I think about it. And we raised over $27,000 to produce this book.
That's fantastic. And it looks great. I love the cover. You all can get the book
at
whenweresinging.com.
Yeah.
No G on the singing. Is it also in the Amazon and the other type of Barnes & Noble outlets, or is it strictly on your website?
No, not yet. No, that'll probably come later down the line. So probably for now and for most of this year, it's going to be strictly available through whenweresinging.com.
Great. Well, I can't wait to get our listeners enjoying this book, because it's... it's long overdue, as Shirley Jones said. It's really amazing that David still is so good for so long. He did the Blood Brothers show up in San Francisco, and a guitar player I play with, Robert Ambury, had a seat in the back. I think it was him and his brother Sean, and the mics blew out. And they lost power. And Robert told me, David, such a pro,
just went right on singing, and his voice was so powerful, he hit the last row of that theater. You could hear him. And I saw him at the Beverly Hills in Los Angeles not too long ago at the Saban Theater, and he was great, just great.
Yeah.
I know David's had a tough time lately. I did organize a little bit of a thing to, you know, give him prayer and support and all that stuff. But you did go to the show that got recently quite a bit of press about David's struggles in Agora. You were actually at that show, weren't you?
Yeah. It was, you know, it was bittersweet. The show, David Cassidy met me that day backstage and took some pictures with me with the book, and was very complimentary, and he had been supportive all along. He had been nothing but 100% supportive of my book. In fact, you know, wrote the foreword for it, which he's, you know, never really endorsed a book before. So to have your childhood hero do that is, you know, it's really a powerful thing in my head, and I'm just forever grateful for it. He's a terrific performer. Like you said, he has this really powerful voice. I had worked with him. My background was in the theater, and I'd booked him for a concert many years prior, which was the impetus.
Was that Ohio, John?
It was in Pennsylvania in a town called Franklin, and it was in 2009.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it was phenomenally successful. It sold out, and David Cassidy was great. Everybody had a great time, and, you know, that's the thing about this music is it's just so important that people recognize that this guy is a really talented singer with a strong voice and an incredible capability to communicate himself through his music. That's just kind of a rare quality, I think, when you can communicate on this intimate level through the music. That's what's so interesting to me about the Partridge Family is all of this stuff put together, if you take that image away, you've got a guy with this really strong, bluesy, soulful voice, backed with a strings arrangement, which is very uncommon for pop music, but able to do because it had the marketing of the TV show behind it. And then you've got these background vocals that are the brilliance of John Baylor, who had been, you know, doing this all the way through the 60s and up into the Partridge Family era here, so he was ready for that. You put all that together, and you've got an original sound that just is indelible and doesn't go away.
Yeah, and one of the original things I love about it is the whole harpsichord sound to it as well. About it's kind of an old instrument, and here it is. I love the harpsichord in there.
Yeah. Yeah, that started with I Think I Love You, too.
Yeah.
In fact, I almost kind of wondered, have always wondered, if when they rearranged the original theme song, which was When We're Singing, people forget that, and they made it into Come On, Get Happy by rewriting the lyrics, part of it was to get that harpsichord sound in there after the success of I Think I Love You and bring that out a little more stronger. I've always kind of thought that was probably part of it.
Yeah. You mentioned the bluesy voice capabilities. He really was a great, great singer. And and the combination, like you say, of the TV, I remember I think it was Friday nights, and we only had three main stations back then. We didn't have hundreds and hundreds of cable stations.
Right.
And so it was like we all watched the same thing. You couldn't go on Netflix and watch it when you want to watch it. So it was very communal.
Right.
Yeah, like, for instance, I think it was Friday night. I think Brady Bunch came on first, then Partridge Family.
That's right.
Is that right? Because my recollection of childhood, sometimes I have to check it. But at school on Friday, I remember talking with the kids, and we'd have Partridge Family trading cards. We'd all, tonight's the night, it's coming on. And, you know, and there was that feeling. We all watched the same thing. And then everywhere you look, John, I remember on every magazine cover, David Cassidy with that long shag haircut. And it just blew up. I mean, he blew the Beatles off the charts. He had a bigger fan club than the Beatles and Elvis. And in the early 70s, I remember reading the Pittsburgh Press as a kid and an opening up, a biggest selling concert acts of that year. in like the early 70s period, and David Cassidy was number one by a long, long shot over everybody else at that time. And I don't think,
yeah.
even in our internet era, I don't think the Justin Biebers and the people touch that kind of dominance.
No.
That, when you now there's so many options with the internet, but then when something blew up, it was just like everybody was on it, you know?
Yes, I agree with you. I remember, too, always David Cassidy's face was everywhere, which was difficult, you know, for him. He's written about that in his own book, the image of it all and trying to deal with that. But, yeah, he was everywhere. He was on Tiger Beat's cover every issue for over 2 years solid. That's a lot of magazine covers.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, to be him and then maybe a little bit smaller picture of Leif Garrett and Donny Osmond and Bobby Sherman.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they had his face on everything. And, you know, he was interesting. What I find interesting is as big as he was here, and you're right, he was number one in – there were many, you know, trade magazine awards that issued David Cassidy and the Partridge Family awards for Top Act of 1970, Cashbox for one. they were selling more records than most of the big hit rock and rollers of that day. And on top of it, this is something that I think that people aren't aware of, because back then you weren't able to cue into what was going on internationally like you are now with the internet.
No, we didn't have the internet.
Back then, in the UK, David Cassidy was bigger in the UK even than he was here. And part of that was due to the president of Bell Records over there promoted him as a solo artist ahead of the Partridge Family. So his solo stuff was just huge in England, and the Partridge Family was also just as big, but I think because they marketed him as a rock and roller or a pop rock and roller over there, he lives on over there differently than he does here. You can, you know, you can walk into card stores over there and pick up a card with David Cassidy's picture on it sitting there in the row with Marilyn and James Dean and, you know, all of these classic icons, which is different than over here.
Yeah, in fact, there's a film I was sent as a gift of David performing in the UK about the year 2000 in Scotland as well. And he did some of the songs that were released in the UK and not released here. And I had a friend of mine who grew up in the UK, Marina. And Marina was like, oh, you know, I love David, especially Daydreamer. And I was like, what, Daydreamer, what? And Daydreamer was a single that blew up number one UK that I don't think they even released here. In fact, here it is. It's, and once I heard this record, I was like, oh, my God, I love this song. This is Daydreamer, number one hit in the UK that I don't think we even got here. This is, I love this song right here.
When
the sun was in the sky and love was burning.
What a gorgeous record, huh?
It is a great song, and, you know, I have a story to tell you about that one. you're right. That song went to number one in the UK, and it was as huge over there as I Think I Love You was here. That song got at number one for 3 weeks in a row over there, and that's exactly what I Think I Love You did over here.
3 weeks
and
number
then
one?
Back up, what's that?
Did you say 3 weeks number one?
3 weeks at number one. It was his biggest run at number one with one of his solo songs, as I Think I Love You was over here. It was phenomenally huge over there. And you're right. It was barely even noticed over here. His third solo album, Dreams Are Nothing More Than Wishes, is the album that that song was on. And I think it had a lot to do with everything was gauged by the Partridge Family over here. So by the time that album came out, David Cassidy had already announced he was not going to come back to the show after the fourth year. And that album was released at the beginning of the fourth year. And I think, you know, when your star's leaving the show, the impetus to really pick up on anything, it starts to, you know how it goes. The wave, the shock wave goes out through the viewer land, and David Cassidy's going to move on, and I think there's a sort of a subconscious, the viewers are going to move on too kind of thing that happens.
Sound Magazine for me is probably my favorite. I have the albums, and but Sound Magazine, it's funny, my dad taught guitar in Pittsburgh where I grew up. We had a music studio and had hundreds of students, and he knew how much I love the Partridge Family. And I got to tell this story. I will tell it. I didn't know
yeah.
if I would. When I was, David came to Pittsburgh when they were huge, Partridge Family. I think that's around 70, 71 when they were really blowing up. His guitar player didn't
right.
make the flight. In fact, it's on the radio. He's talking about, my guitar player's not here. He's really nervous, and all these people are mobbing the hotel. And it's still online somewhere, this interview. My dad gets a call. We need you to come, because he was kind of had a reputation of being the best guitarist in Pittsburgh, and play for David at the concert. And my dad said no. I didn't know about this till after the call. And then my mom said, there was some guy from David Cassidy called. Oh, yeah, they wanted me to play for David Cassidy tonight, but I have all my students booked. And I was 9 years old, and me and all my, nine-year-old friend. No, I wasn't even nine. I was probably seven or eight. We were all like, oh, my God, this is David Cassidy, Partridge Family. Are you out of your freaking mind? You could cancel your students
right.
tonight. But he had that responsibility that his teaching, was the number one thing. But as a concession gift that I was so upset, he got me sheet music, a big, thick book, and it was the Sound Magazine, all the chords and notes. And, that
great.
Album just had all those songs, One Night Stand, Brown Eyes, Echo Valley, You Don't Have to Tell Me, Rainmaker, On My Way Back Home, Summer Days, I Would Have Loved You Anyway, 24 Hours a Day, I Woke Up in Love This Morning, Love Is All I Ever Need, all those. And I
yep.
learned those songs at about nine on the guitar. I could play them all frontward and backwards. And so those songs for me, I mean, I've written since myself hundreds of songs, and I feel like I got a great school and great songwriting from those songs. And I always knew in my gut as a kid they were really well-crafted songs, even though some of the bully-type kids were like, why do you like David Cassidy? That's for the girls
yeah,
and
right.
sissies, you know. But I knew in my heart it was great music.
Yeah, I think you do when you're young. You don't really know why you know it. You just kind of recognize it. I always knew that, I never really liked the teeny bopper bubblegum music that was out there. So I guess I didn't really think too much. They were calling it teeny bopper music. All I knew was that I liked it, and that it was a heck of a lot better than all this other stuff that they were calling bubblegum. So, of course, we grow up and, we read about who worked on these things, and we come to understand the idea of an image and how it's marketed versus what it actually really is. I mean, if you take some of the actual bubblegum music of that day and you play it, and you play the Partridge Family music next to it, I mean, if you put that stuff together in a CD mix thing and you play through it, I think, and not tell anybody who's in there, I think you'd immediately be able to spot the Partridge Family as something completely different than all the rest.
Yeah. Yeah, and anyone that knows music, the craft of songwriting, the craft of arranging, like I say, our family's all musical. My brother that just passed 2 months ago was a great guitarist and ran a music studio.
Oh, wow.
He recorded many bands. And when I would share this music with them, even though some of my brothers were more hardcore rockers, they knew, they were like, damn, this guy is really, really good.
Yeah, he was really good. And it's just kind of a shame that he could just never break that image. It's just, it was so strong. And the image was equally as desirable. The image of the Partridge Family is something that, I mean, how could you not love that? It was the perfect image of the ideal family that we all kind of, wanted to have or fantasized about, and in some cases played out inside of our own families. Sometimes certain characters would, you would have elements of that show alive in your own family. And in other cases, it would be an escape for kids who had bad childhoods and, could fantasize about the ideal family. So powerful was that image that David Cassidy, when he gets out there and tries to just break the image, he does do it, but it never really went away. It was always,
It pieced with it, at least in the fact that in his concerts in the recent years, he was performing that stuff, the Partridge Family songs. And I remember his leaving it all behind after a girl died that was trampled. I think it was in England at concerts. And his recognition, oh, my God, I'm idolized to the point, like, only God should be idolized, like, or worshipped to this extent. And I remember him doing a dissolve on it and kind of disappearing when he was the biggest in the world. And I think that made him and the whole story have this kind of mythic thing to it because, you know, most people don't vanish, you know, and do a Greta Garbo when they're on the top of the world like he did. But I think that's how crippling the whole thing was, and perhaps the – not that he was responsible, but the feeling maybe of some guilt that this these girls were trampled at the concert and that sort of thing. But him disappearing in the middle of it, that really was very poignant.
You know, it's funny that you talked about the Pittsburgh concert earlier because the thing that came to mind when you were talking, I've heard clips from that radio broadcast. You know, I'm from back here too, and I actually had a friend who had a copy of that, and I've heard clips of that interview he did, and that was as early as 1971. So, okay, he had four tours between 1971 and 74, and in 74, that's the culmination where it just got so insane that the little girl at White City Stadium in England was crushed to death. So what's interesting is there are signs of that mania starting from the very beginning, because if you listen to that Pittsburgh interview, he's stopping in the middle of the interview and telling people to stop pushing so hard against the glass or something. He's telling them to push back.
Wow, I remember that, John.
You remember that? And that's what went on at the very end. If you listen to some of his in fact, I read that he had at some point when he was doing the live album, he had Cassidy Live come out there in sorry, I have a throat issue going on here today. They were trying to he was telling the fans constantly to push back during those concert appearances. And when they put that live album together, I guess I had read that he said that, you know, they had a heck of a time cutting out his voice telling people to push back.
So
and
David
here,
was worried from the very beginning about the trampling
the very beginning
going on. Wow, that's
in 1971 in that Pittsburgh interview, which was one of the very first concerts. That was from the first tour in 71 when he went out promoting Cherish.
I believe.
He's telling people to stop pushing against the
I think
the glass or something.
I think he may have, and of course I'm not a doctor formally diagnosing him, but I believe David may have had some pretty severe PTSD from all this. My doctor, Larry Rosen, who produced the Partridge Family and then went into the medical field, had told me that he and David were just not prepared. They literally had no idea. They thought they were just doing a show. It was an acting gig to David. And he said, when this thing blew up overnight, I think I love you. And all of a sudden, hundreds and hundreds of people are jumping on the car David's in and, you know, grabbing his arm and that trampling type of thing. And Larry said he was, you know, Larry's exact words were, Richard, it was a baptism by fire, and I had to hide David under blankets in the back seat and do all these tricks. And he said it just was so overwhelming. And my friend Josie, I mentioned earlier, dating David around this time, told me about how just going to the grocery store, you know, with him was trauma, you know, of will something happen or... You know, everywhere in the store is his face, and you know, this was something that eventually overwhelmed him.
Oh yeah, I mean, can you imagine being a person sitting in a car driving along, and 2 months later you're in that car driving along, and all of these people jump on your roof and stick their face against the windshield trying to get to you? Can you imagine how bizarre that would be? I mean, it doesn't seem bizarre to the people who are becoming fan-crazed from something they see on TV and, you know, idolizing. It just seems fun. But if you put yourself in the position of the person sitting in that car who's driving along before he's famous and then driving along 3 weeks later and having people jump on the car and stick their faces to the window, that would be pretty weird, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be strange to try to absorb?
It sure is, and you capture it so well. By the way, if you want to get John's book, whenwersinging.com, and this book is just has so much in it, over 500 pages, 64-page full-color photo section, and it's available only now at John's site, whenwersinging.com. By the way, speaking of all this incredible memorabilia and this incredible era, you actually got the David Cassidy jumpsuit. Tell us about that. Was that was that from his first concert tour? It has that kind of Elvis type of feel. I there was a guy that lived by me. He's since passed away, and he lived by the library I go to in Studio City. He was the guy. Duty, he had a weird name, Duty or something. He did the Elvis jumpsuits and the David Cassidy jumpsuits, I think. I know he did the Osmonds. But how did you end up getting your hands on that incredible David Cassidy jumpsuit from the big concert tours?
Well, yeah, the one I have is the white one with the fringe on it from the first tour. And you're right, the same guy who designed Elvis's costumes designed a lot of David Cassidy's, and that was one of them. David had auction, 10 years ago or maybe more now. It was longer than that. And he was raising money for charity and cleaning out his closet, and he just felt that it was time to pass some of this stuff along to, you know, the fan base, the fans who wanted it. And he held the auction, and you could bid pretty much from anywhere. You know, they had it set up in such a way that I think they held the auction in Los Angeles out there.
I remember that. I do remember that. Now.
Yeah. So you could call in, and they had people standing by, and, you know, they would bid for you over the phone. And so he got rid of four jumpsuits that day, and that just happened to be the one that I won. Yeah.
Oh, are you lucky? Well, inquiring minds want to know, but feel free to not answer if it's personal, how much you got it for. I don't know if you want to answer that or not. I'm sure everyone's curious.
Maybe I will pass on that.
Okay, I'll let you pass on that because, you know.
I think all of us, there were four jumpsuits that sold that day. All of us, the four people who won them, probably paid more than we ever should have and probably spent a long time paying our credit cards off.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you got it. And you mentioned David's bluesy voice. My brother, Pete, who went to heaven 2 months ago, this is a Partridge Family song that is kind of a song for my late brother and I. We grew up at Westview Park in Pittsburgh by the roller coaster and rode the Big Dips. And I remember Pete, life is like a roller coaster, up and down, and you never know, all these highs and lows. And I think this might have been the last song he did, Roller Coaster, but it really shows the bluesy voice he did. Here's a little clip of Roller Coaster. I love this song. Is this the last song? It's towards the end, isn't it?
Yeah.
Roller coaster ride. There'll be times you get so scared rolling down these hills. Hold on tight with all your might, cause you won't know what you feel. Go up, down, all around, on a cycle that's never ending. Got on this train when you were born, and the wheels just keep on spinning. Like a roller coaster, keeps going faster. Time going faster, just coming at you. Hey, up, down, all around, like a roller coaster. Just 16, thought I'd have some fun. Hitched a ride on a diesel truck, headed for Washington. I know what my papa meant when he told me heart to heart. Soon you'll find out soon enough about the best in amusement park. You thrill like a kid, you get so excited. You hang on tight with all your might as if your heart's ignited. Like a roller coaster, keeps going faster.
Keeps going faster.
Stop going.
Oh, man, when that record came out, John, towards the end of the run of the show, oh, my God, it just hit me. It just was such a great record.
I love that song. I love that you picked that song right now because, first of all, let me just tell you, I'm so sorry about your loss with your brother.
Oh, thank you, John.
Nothing prepares us for stuff like that.
No.
It's just And you picked a good song to go along with how it kind of describes life, doesn't it? And there we go again,
yeah.
The Partridge Family song, labeled as bubblegum, but there's nothing bubblegum about that song.
No at all. Here's the close. Listen to him rock it. Very funky song, isn't it?
I love that song, and I love that you picked that because when I was a kid, I kind of latched onto the Partridge Family. I didn't find it from the very beginning. I found it towards the end and discovered the Partridge Family at the end. So I would, you know, go to the TV on Friday nights with my tape recorder and, you know, shush everybody in the room so I could record the songs, and that was my only way of having some of those songs because the records were just starting to go out of print. And I remember that was my favorite Partridge Family song, and I remember.
Wow, really? That's cool. Because it's
yeah.
It's
back then it was
that it's not thought of in the canon of like the top ten type of like I Think I Love You or
I
Woke Up in Love This Morning or.
I mean, I know they had the cancellation of the show. Yeah. They had the cancellation of the show pending when that out. That was from the last album called Bulletin Board. And I think Bell Records made a big mistake not releasing that song as their single from that album. They released another song, Looking for a Good Time, and it didn't chart anywhere and didn't do anything. Now, Roller Coaster might not have either because in America, that the TV show was what everybody was gauging, and David Cassidy had announced he was leaving. And I just think it was just on the downslide, and there was kind of no stopping that at that point. But I think the best choice from that album for a single was Roller Coaster, and I think they missed the boat on that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
And if you look at all of the hits packages, you know, all the hit CDs that come out since, sort of time has passed and the fans, the fan favorites that were never singles are tend to be included on those hits packages, and that song is always on those hits packages. So I think somebody somewhere recognized it after the fact that, you know, wow, this was the great miss from this album as a single.
Yeah. Well, all of you listening, whenweresingin.com is the website to get this incredible work that John's put together. There's some weird stuff about the Partridge Family, too. Did you know there's a church out there that kind of, the Partridge Family Church, that believes David is the Messiah and everything? Have you seen those guys?
Oh, my God. That's crazy. No, I mean, is that the Partridge Family Temple? I don't know about them.
I've heard
about it, but I'm sure it's got to be sort of campy and tongue-in-cheek, I would have to think.
Yeah, they talked to me about coming on the show. We don't have anything set yet, but but I do agree with some of their doctrine that when David sings, you just feel a wonderful spiritual feeling of love wash over you. I have to agree with them on that part.
Yeah, the energy and the innocence, yeah.
And they believe that Shirley Jones, hey, that maybe we'll have to have them come on next since I'm bringing this up. But Shirley Jones, they believe, is like the great kind of mother, like Mary, the golden hair, golden mother figure. And
well, that's just yet another example of, you know, how the Partridge Family has endured in different pop culture. You know, it pops up in pop culture all the time.
David was very gracious. He said, "I appreciate your liking our music, but I'm just a person, and you know, worship God and not me." He very gently said, "This is David in a very classy way." In a very classy way, David said, "This is getting a little out there."
Yeah, I have to agree with that tenfold.
Well, what
but it would be interesting to hear them talk, though, I'm sure.
Yeah, I always thought so, too. You know, there's a lot of, it's interesting, some of these things. There's an Ed Wood church for the low-budget filmmaker, too.
no kidding.
There's a lot of interesting religious spins on everything, but
wow.
David did do a great, religion, he did a great gospel song on one of the episodes, too, about the sunshine or something. I got the something in my heart. I can't remember. What was it?
Oh, Sunshine.
Yeah, Sunshine.
Yeah, that was from the Crossword Puzzle album, which was the second to the last album. And there you go again, touching on a song that I think was the missed single from that album. That album
what
didn't
album
have
was that?
A
Crossword
single.
Puzzle, right?
Yeah, it was on Crossword Puzzle, and there was no single from that album. Bell Records was undergoing huge changes through the months leading up to that album, and they had planned.
Well, in gratitude for your work, John, here we go. This is for you, John.
Oh, thank you.
And I want to thank you, John, for sharing the love of the Partridge Family and the music and sharing your love for this in this book and sharing our mutual love for David and Shirley and the gang and rest in peace, Suzanne. What it was a kind of a shock that the first one to pass from Earth was the youngest one, played Little
Tracy.
Yeah,
that was shocking.
That was a shock.
Very shocking. Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, I've really enjoyed it, and I'm so grateful for your work. I can't thank you enough for capturing such a part of my childhood and that I'll always cherish because these songs make me feel that feeling of innocence and hope and love. And, you know, we go through life and we get older and sometimes the world and the trials and tribulations try to knock that happy innocence out of us, but your book helps us get some of it back, and I thank you for your wonderful book.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
You're welcome, John. Keep up the good work. And by the way, this link, John, and everyone listening, is good in perpetuity to share with other friends and Partridge Family fans to learn about this book and to enjoy John and I's discussion.
Oh, great.
You can tell this is a labor of love for you, John, and me, that we both really, really love this stuff, and that makes it easy to talk about.
Yeah, it sure is. Yes, I'll be passing the link around to all my friends out there on Facebook and Twitter and all of that, so hopefully everybody will get to listen in at some point.
Yeah, keep up the good work, John, and if you're ever out in Southern California doing a book signing on this again, just let us know. We'd love to meet you.
Oh, terrific. I would love that, and I will. I'll keep you posted.
Okay, God bless you, John, and God bless all of you for listening today. Keep up the sunshine. Keep spreading the sunshine. You are the light of the world. Don't hide your light under a bushel. Don't let your light shine all over the land. Let it shine, shine, shine. Here's David taking us up.
We got the sunshine. We got the sunshine.